Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Grand Blitz, episode 352 in the house, the pre-Christmas edition of the Gridiron Blitz. We're getting ready for Christmas this Friday, so a lot of action is going to happen in the NFL. NBA's back, college football in full swing with all the bowl games. We're also going to be diving into week 16 with the playoff scenarios, the wild card playoffs, and then the bowl game matchups and the reason certain teams didn't get in. So we'll be talking to Hall of Famer Holly Custis in a couple minutes here as we get the breakdown for college football, NFL Week 15, and then Mackenzie Brooks will be here in a half hour or so to kind of preview Week 16 and what that's going to look like in the NFL. We'll also have news and notes from the Hub at facebook.com/gridironbeauties, and then we'll also dive into a little bit of news in terms of the scenario in Gridiron West and Gridiron New South Wales, in terms of finishing up the season December and January. So welcome aboard, everybody. Make sure you go to monkeyknifefight.com. If you haven't played NFL all season, you're missing out. So check it out. You can go to monkeyknifefight.com. Fast and simple prop games, shark-free fantasy out of the way here. You can do more or less props, fantasy challenge props. You can do star players only, so there's no lineups like on DSF or DraftKings or FanDuel. $2 minimum, get an instant deposit, match up to $50, minimum of $10. You sign up using our code NJF at monkeyknifefight.com. MonkeyKnifeFight is our sponsor, keeps the Blitz on the air, talking about women's American football as well as NFL weekly. So check it out at monkeyknifefight.com. Use the code NJF and get started today. So let's bring in the Hall of Famer here so we can talk college football. So Holly, how's it going today?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Getting ready for Christmas. Doing shopping online and a little bit local.
Yeah. I try to get mine done a little bit earlier this year because I know that COVID has wreaked havoc on, shipping and the logistics of everything. I think I started right after Thanksgiving. I think almost all the packages are here, definitely I think, considering how rough 2020 is and has been for a lot of people, I think it's an important time to try to have a moment of joy or two at the end of the year. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah, I don't have a large family. A lot of people have large families. We don't have a large family, so we're going to pretty much stay put. And so we're sending out Christmas cards for the most part and other gifts locally. But other than that, it's been okay. I mean, like I said, plan ahead. Like you said earlier, just get in. Most of it was done in November anyway. So I didn't want to, wait till the last minute. And then you get, UPS and FedEx saying you can't get it shipped or arrive on time and things like that. So you do have to plan ahead, especially in times. Holly, Cincinnati gets snubbed. And then we got, the usual lineup. I don't think it was any surprise. We talked about the beginning of the month. Remember you said some people are going to be very disappointed. And then so the college rankings come out here. Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Notre Dame are the top four teams. And they will play in the playoffs, of course. And Alabama will play Notre Dame at the Rose Bowl, which is normally in California. Now it's going to be in Arlington, Texas, sort of what the Dodgers did for the World Series. And Clemson will play Ohio State in the Sugar Bowl. So the other New Year's Six Bowls were announced on Sunday afternoon as well. So the biggest one, I think, besides Cincinnati would have been Indiana, which we had been talking about it in the past couple of weeks, remember, with the good defense.
Right.
So they're 6-1, and they lose out on a large bid for a prestigious bowl game, so to Florida and Iowa State.
Yeah, well, I mean, okay, so you know, 2020 was going to be a crazy season no matter what, because like we were talking about before, it's difficult when you're comparing teams that have played, 11, 10, 8 games, and then some teams play, you know, 4, mm-hmm. 5, 6 games, depending on what league you're in, and also depending on just pure luck if the people that you were scheduled to play didn't have to drop a game because of COVID, or you didn't have to drop a game or two because of COVID. And so there was just not going to be a smooth way to decide between these teams. But I think, at least from the standpoint of your average fan, I think for me, it's one of these things that if this was going to be the year that if Cincinnati got into the playoffs, this had to be that year, because of all the chaos and all the comparing apples to oranges and all of that drama. Cincinnati going undefeated, I think, you know, is really disappointing that they weren't, not only that they weren't in the playoffs, but that they were so far removed from those top four. Finishing, you know, eighth in the final rankings, I think is definitely a slight to them. And I think for me, I think it tells you that there's no way that a group of five team is ever going to get into the playoffs in this current format. It's just not going to happen. There's always going to be another excuse of, even if you had a couple undefeated teams and a couple two-loss teams, because every once in a while we have a crazy year like that, they would still pick a two-loss, you know, let's say hypothetically two-loss Notre Dame over Cincinnati that's undefeated. It's just never going to happen. And I think we all hope that it would happen because we all, you know, Americans love underdogs, and so we're always, like, rooting for that Cincinnati team or the UCF team previously, or, you know, Coastal Carolina, teams like that, sometimes BYU. We want those teams to do well. And then it's just not fair to them. And then so for me, I'm like, geez, like, I really thought we should have expanded to 8 teams a long time ago. But if you're in a group of five and you're like a Cincinnati, you know, or UCF or teams like that, they are really good teams, and you're putting together really good programs, why the hell would you stay around if there's no chance that you can get to the playoffs? So they either have to expand the playoffs, or if they don't, I would not be surprised if some of these teams like Cincinnati, UCF, either start moving conferences to get into the picture, or some of these conferences just get out of the picture altogether, because it is just not a fair free market in this environment for those teams. And so you're thinking to yourself, what if you were in the NFL and you were in a division of four teams, and you know that one person or one team out of the four gets into the playoffs, but you know that only two teams ever get considered. And if you're one of the other two teams, you can go undefeated and be 16-0 and never get to the playoffs. Why the hell would you waste your time? So I think that's kind of the frustration for those teams. And I agree, it's not fair. And then when you're looking at the fact that Notre Dame just got walloped by Clemson, it was not even close. I was surprised that they kept them in. You know, I know that they beat Clemson the last time around and they played really well, but this game, it was not close. So I also think Texas A&M has a big gripe as well, because I think that they were a solid team, and they had, you know, they had a resume that I think at least should have gotten more consideration, especially since Notre Dame just got destroyed. So I think what this does is it sets Notre Dame up to just get destroyed by Alabama. If that happens, then all these people are going to come out and be like, well, why didn't you put Texas A&M again, you know, in there? So Notre Dame, for their brand's sake, has to at least try to be competitive against Alabama. I think they have the talent to create some matchup problems, but I don't know if they had the talent to finish the whole game. So we'll see what happens there. I do also agree that Indiana got, you know, completely snubbed on this. This is the best they've played in, like, I don't know, like 60 years. And I think for me, the Indiana-Ohio State issue shows you that, you know, the Big Ten definitely has a lot of power when it comes to the playoff committee, but they really love Ohio State. And I think even if Indiana had gone undefeated and beaten Ohio State, I don't know if they would have gotten in because they're not a big enough brand. And I think for me, what this year has taught me, and somebody brought this up, I saw on Facebook somewhere, that the playoff is not a playoff. It's an invitational. You're not
it
playing to get in it, really.
It's
yeah,
a complete
it is an invitation. Beauty
I mean,
contest.
When you consider your point, right, it's like it's the top four is locked in. So whether they lose
right.
one, whether they lose two or three games, they're going to go back to what? Oh, this their strength of schedule was way better than the lower ranked team's strength of schedule.
Right.
Well, if you're gonna go through strength of schedule, then at that point, once it comes to the playoffs, then it's just a matchup of one versus eight, you know, one, two versus
right.
six. You know what I mean, if you're gonna go that route, then you might as well just make it like the NFL does. You're ranked number one. Alabama
right.
would have to face today. Alabama would have to face Ohio State to try to make the playoffs. You know, to get into the playoff contention. If you wanted to make it top 10 and make it more competitive,
right.
you would have to make it to where Alabama faces Iowa State, which is 11-0 versus 9-3, which would make sense, right? 11-0
right.
against 9-3. And then you would have Clemson taking on Georgia, 7-2 against 10-1.
Right.
And then you would have given Cincinnati the opportunity to take down an Ohio State, a 9-0 versus
right.
6-0. That would have been
right.
a lot more, you know, better for them too, for the 6 through 10 teams, just to get the opportunity
right.
to get 1 week, the 1 week prior, and then at that point you can say, okay, now we've eliminated, you know, 6 through 10, and these are the final four.
Right.
I think that's what they should do.
Right. And I think the other, you know, component to this, we were talking about, you know, like the underdog teams. If you want to make this a free market environment, then you have to expand to at least eight. And you could do it different ways. I think the most common
right.
sense thing to me makes sense if you go, you know, the Power Five conference winners, and then you can go three at large bids. You could go five Power Conference winners, consistent number one from the group of five, and then two at large. You could do it different ways. But what you need is more people invited to the party, because we're like at Cincinnati, right? Perception in college football is everything. The reason,
right.
one of the reasons why these teams like Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State keep getting in is because recruiting comes out of these games. When you're on national TV, consistently
mm-hmm.
in these big games, kids that are 16, 17, 18 years old, they love the shine of that environment. They're going to gravitate towards those teams. So what happens is when a Cincinnati can get into that party, then recruits start looking at Cincinnati, and then they get better and the competition gets better. The
mm-hmm.
product at the end of the day gets better when you open up the competition and allow these other teams in. It only makes the product better. And I think a lot of the, you know, I know that they're locked into contracts and they do these for, you know, long periods of time, and they understand the financial part of that. But I also think that they need to wake up and understand if they don't fix this, you're going to lose some, and some of these schools are not going to just, you know, bother at all. And then what happens is, well, then who are these, you know, big dogs going to play if they don't have the little dogs to play anymore? You know what I mean? So they have to fix it. And COVID provides an opportunity to fix that structure. And so I'm hoping that leadership prevails and they make changes and at least expand it. Because if they don't, I feel like, you know, I feel terrible for, like, a Cincinnati, because it's just not going to happen.
There's enough money in this Division One college football. If a playoff mode can be done in Division Three and Division Two, I don't understand
yeah.
why this Division One has to be different. You know what I mean? It's like you're
right.
going off, you're going off, like you said, it's kind of like just a prize mentality. Oh, who do you want to give it to this week because they're so good, right? It just doesn't work.
Right.
I mean, the only other method I would know that I would think of would be, okay, for every, win, you know, you get a win, you get a point. You could do it like the international does, and the international scopes with like a different sports, where you get a win, 1 point for the win, and if you score over 40 points, you get another 2 points, right? And if you score under 20 points, you're going to get 1 point. So that means literally that takes away the strength of schedule, because now you're like, okay, now you're getting points for, you know, horrible loss, and you're getting points for a great victory, and then you get a point for the victory.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go into soccer mode.
Right.
Into the soccer realm of things, you know what I mean? The aggregate type mentality. I mean, that would work better for, I think, college football, because now you're really eliminating the strength of schedule and you're really just going by scoring and an actual win. So that would help, obviously, like Cincinnati, for example.
Right.
You know, if they scored a lot of points, then obviously the justification is there for say, hey, we need to be in the dance. But yeah, to your point, they got to fix it. They got to come up with something. Even the eight would have been fair for Cincinnati, because they would have to face what, Alabama, an opportunity to face an Alabama, and then Florida would have to take it on Clemson as an example.
I think, you know, there's like, if Cincinnati, you know, they ended up eighth, if they had been like fifth or sixth, then I can buy that more. But the fact that they're eighth, they're behind teams that lost 2 and 3 games. That's really insulting. And then Indiana has one loss, only to Ohio State, and they played them extremely well and almost won that game and probably should have won the game. And then they're behind two teams in front of them that have 3 losses. It's a 2-game difference. That is really not accurate, in my opinion. You know, I think Indiana really deserved a lot better as well. And when I'm looking at this ranking system, it's less to me about strength of schedule. It's more to me about branding, which is really sad because it steals away from what could be. And it's not to say we don't think Alabama or Clemson or Ohio State or all these teams are good teams. They are good teams. But what happens is perception turns into reality, where you're missing some of these teams that could compete. And then by being involved in the party, they could get better in the long-term game by getting more recruits, and then you have a better product overall on the field. And I think they're missing that opportunity. And I hope
Cincinnati to play in Alabama would be there, to your
would
point.
Be huge.
The visibility for recruiting to play in Alabama and to compete against an Alabama, then somebody would say, man, where's that program, right? You'd ask that question. Cincinnati's a great, a good team. Even if they don't beat Alabama, it puts like a grain of salt in there going, where is Cincinnati? That's a good program, right? Because they're up against Alabama.
Right. Yeah. One day, Oscar.
One day. Ever since I've started looking into this, it's sketchy, okay? It's almost like Washington, D.C. with all the shady stuff. Just saying.
It's a lot. It's And here's the weird thing. It used to be so much worse.
Yeah, no, I know you told me before.
And then, you know, and then the weird thing is also, you know, a lot of the pushback initially to create, you know, when they first had like the BCS era and then they had like the, you know, the playoff era and all this stuff was there's a lot of tradition involved in bowl games. Well, what's happening because you're not – expanding the playoff is that, let's say you are the star person on your team and your team, you know, like, I don't know, they go like 9-3 or something and they go to like a medium level bowl. A lot of those guys are opting out and then they're not participating because they're trying to save themselves for the draft, which totally makes sense because they feel like, oh, well, you know, it's just an average bowl game. Why would I put my body on the line knowing that I'm going to have a payday?
Yeah, it's not a national championship. There's no price for it, and you're not going to get ranked any higher. You're not going to make any more money. So you're not going to be like in the top 10.
No, and so I think what's happening is they thought that having a playoff would take the shine away from the bowl games, when in actuality, not expanding the playoff has taken the shine off the bowl games. Because you have the system in place and the structure with the bowl games, you could simply you could do it a couple different ways, but you know they have reinvented some of the bowl games at the top level. You could do that at the medium level too, or you could simply have the better record, you know, host the game or whatever. But you can do it in different ways to still save that tradition, but also bring in the opportunity for better competition. So.
And then we talked about conferences in the past. You've mentioned it before. I mean, the SEC is kind of like the ownership of it. And Notre Dame being independent by namesake, the Texas swing pretty much owns, you know, the Big Ten, the Big 12. So, you know, we talked about the bias for the Pac-10 in that regard too. So there's just a lot, so many things to your point, they have to deal with. They got to put it on the table and they got to figure out how it can come about to be even a better product and more excitement, especially when it comes to January. All right, guys, invite you guys to go to monkeyknifefight.com. Monkeyknifefight.com is our sponsor. They've been a great sponsor so far this year, owned by the NFL Players PA as well, ownership there. So really excited to pair up with them. I was really excited at the beginning of the year when I got the news that we were going to be sponsored by them. So it was really awesome. So go to monkeyknifefight.com. Shark-free fantasy games, more or less fantasy challenge, star players only, including the NFL, $2 minimum buy-in. You get an instant deposit up to $50, $10 minimum as well. Sign up, use NJF, helps us out with the podcast, keep us going here to bring attention to women's American football as well as NFL news and notes weekly that we do with the NFL. And then also our co-host here keeps us going with their good insights as well. So if you enjoy our podcast, the simple thing to do, just go to monkeyknifefight.com, sign up, and you can actually make some money there on more or less. That's what I play. It's pretty easy to do. Well, you know, Roethlisberger, more or less over Finley. So I went with Finley, and guess what? I got pretty good. I did pretty good, more or less. And Ben didn't play that great. So kind of just justify that for me. So get an instant deposit up to $50. So go sign up at monkeyknifefight.com. Use code NJF. All right. So talking about that, let's see here. What bowl games are we going to be like? Just let's say three games. Obviously, the Rose Bowl's moved to Texas, and then we have the Sugar Bowl. So what other game should we be watching? I know there's games on now, right? Started yesterday or today and then going through the week.
Yeah, right now BYU is crushing UCF 42-10, which is not surprising. But there are quite a few good matchups. So there's a lot of bowl games that had to cancel either because of their local, restrictions that they had to deal with, or because there were simply not enough teams to fulfill their bowl game because a lot of them opted out. But there are some still really good games. On the 29th, Oklahoma State plays Miami. I think those are two exciting teams to watch. Oklahoma State's defense is still really strong, and Zaire King is a really exciting quarterback to watch, so I think that will be fun. And then, let's see, you got Florida at against Oklahoma. That matchup will be really exciting as well. I think Florida has proven that they have athletes. And Kyle Trask, you know, last year was really kind of inconsistent. This year he has proven that he can be clutch in the fourth quarter. And then I still think Kyle Pitts is the best tight end that's been in college football for a few years now. So that's really fun. And Oklahoma has improved a lot. They started out really slow out of the gate, and they've kind of gotten themselves together a bit. So this is going to be a test for Oklahoma's defense that was really poor at the beginning of the year and has seemed to have improved. So that will be a good matchup that I like. And then when you get to the games on the first, you have Georgia and Cincinnati. And Georgia's playing better offensively with JT Daniels. You know, Georgia the last few years has been very strong on defense, but it's been their offense that, you know, has either been on or off. And I think JT has kind of giving them a shot in the arm. And then we get that Cincinnati matchup where this might be might not be as good as the playoff situation for them, but it's at least a New Year's Day bowl, so that at least that's something for them. And then you get, of course, the semifinal games, Notre Dame against Alabama, and again, Notre Dame, how are they going to respond after getting destroyed by Clemson? And that was not just the loss. It was the way that they lost. It was the way that Ian Book couldn't get out of the pocket. It was the way they couldn't get the ball to their tight ends the way that they like to do. They offensively couldn't do anything. Can they right the ship against Alabama, who is kind of just on a roll right now? That's going to be a big question. And then you have Ohio State and Clemson, who I don't know if you saw, but Dabo Sweeney, in his coaching poll ballot that he sent in, he ranked Ohio State 11th. And he's been very vocal all year about everything, really, but also about Ohio State and how he doesn't think they should be ranked third, and because they haven't played a lot of games. And yes, I do think Ohio State has definitely gotten the benefit of the doubt, not only nationally, but also from their own conference to get them into this spot. But I do think Dabo is also a little bit of a drama queen this year. And Ohio State could not, you know, they couldn't help that they only played six games. That's what they were dealt with, right?
Right.
So I also think I'm kind of torn in this one because, you know, I really love like Trevor Lawrence is a guy who you're like, okay, he's kind of like that kid brother personality who he's kind of naive a little bit, but then he like is also just a nice kid. And so I like watching him play. I like the Clemson players. The Dabo has been wearing on me this year a little bit. And then Ohio State, who also like gets the benefit of the doubt from everything. So who's going to win that matchup? That's going to be an interesting one. You know, especially because Fields had not his best game the last game around. And I think Fields, his key is when he does not try to do too much. And if they're able to run the ball like they were the last game, that will help. It's when they can't run the ball and Fields has to try to create too much on his own that they get in trouble. So all great matchups, but then you also have, let's see, my Ducks against Iowa State. That will be a fun one on the second. You know, we took care of USC for you, Oscar, and our defense, I don't know where they were before, but
you did.
So that was the first time. What was it?
I say you really did. Appreciate it.
I know. It was awesome because, you know, Oregon and USC have developed to be rivals the last, like, 15 years or so. And I think defensively that was the best performance we've had because we're so young that at the beginning of the year they were – you know, they were out of position, they overran plays, they were arm tackling, they weren't communicating, and then all of that came together in this game, and it was awesome, and I was like, oh, if we had played that way defensively all year, like, it would be a completely different story for this season, but it's exciting for next year, so it's going to be still a challenge because Breece Hall for Iowa State is one of the best running backs in the country, so it's really going to test, you know, was that a matchup thing for us against USC, or has our defense really, really improved, and can we handle a running back like Breece Hall when we struggled so much against Jamar from Oregon State a few weeks ago? So that's going to be a fun matchup. And then also Texas A&M against North Carolina is going to be fun because Texas A&M has to be frustrated that they were there. Notre Dame got smacked around and they didn't get into the playoff. And then North Carolina, you know, has a really powerful offense when they're rolling. So I think that should be, you know, an up-tempo type of game with a lot of offense. I'm excited to see that one, too.
Yeah, I think the one I'm looking forward to is Cincinnati against Georgia. If they can beat Georgia, it kind of proves their point that they maybe deserve to have been in a higher rank. You know what I mean? They should have been deserving of a higher rank. And we'll see what the score is. If they run up the score on Georgia for whatever reason and Georgia doesn't perform as well, more proven, you know, for them. So I got Rose Bowl. You said Rose Bowl semifinal, Alabama, Notre Dame. Sugar Bowl, Clemson at Ohio State. And then we got Fiesta Bowl, Oregon against Iowa State. We also have Indiana going to take on Ole Miss at the Outback Bowl. And then Orange Bowl, as you said, Texas A&M against North Carolina. So we're looking forward to it. And then the national championship, obviously, on Monday, January 11th. So it's pretty awesome. All right, guys, if you guys haven't gone to our No Joke Football sites on Facebook, on Instagram, at No Joke Football, on Twitter, at No Joke Football, check out the stuff there at the Zazzle.com/Gridiron Beauty site. It supports our podcast as well through the apparel branding and all the awesome athletes that are sporting our stuff. A shout out to the Aussie girls out there, Shiloh Phillips, Renee Hahn, and company out there for doing their part, Aliyah Carmali. So thank you guys out there in Aussie land for sporting out No Joke Football brand, as well as all the other athletes. So check them out at No Joke Football on Facebook, No Joke Football on Instagram, and as well as at No Joke Football on Twitter. All right, Holly, my Rams laid an egg. I mean, like, I'm so, like, what the hell? You know what I mean? What the hell? Opportunity to clinch the division, really put it away. Starting to feel like fisher ears here for me. This is not good.
Yeah, that was a head scratcher because I was, you know, you had an opportunity to like you said, take the division, and we all know how hard the division is. And then to do that against the Jets is really head scratching. I don't really understand that either. And it's really interesting because going into the year, I honestly didn't think the Rams would be that good. I didn't think they'd be terrible, but I thought they would probably be kind of where the Cardinals are. So kind of good, but not quite. And so they've actually outpaced my expectations going in. But this game is kind of a head scratcher. Like I'm not quite sure.
We knew
sure
the Jets had a good defense.
How you
we had talked about the Jets having a good defense. We did
right.
do that. He
yeah.
did play really
yeah.
well. So I think the blame goes on the offense, and I think McVay knew it because on his press conference, he was not a happy guy. And the fact that he lost by 3 points just tells you the whole story right there.
Yeah, and then I do agree. It seemed like the offense was not – they dug themselves a hole, and then they were trying to come back, and it was kind of too little too late. But I just think it's – your team goes as far as – Goff goes. If he's consistent on the offensive side of the ball and you're running the ball well, your defense is really strong. The defensive line and the secondary are really good, you know. So I don't know. This is a head scratcher. Hopefully, you know, every team has one of these at least. Like every good team has one weird loss per year. Maybe this is it for you, I'm hoping. But it does open the division up a little bit again. And so now
we have
more pressure
we
on
we have to have
gosh.
Arizona win. We have to if we lose to Seattle, we have to have Arizona win and the Bears lose. That's how we get in.
Right.
To a playoff first. Right? Cuz we're not going to win the division. Seattle beats us, they win the division. Now we are fighting for a playoff berth, which is a Chicago loss, which they're playing pretty well right now, and an Arizona win, which more than likely that could happen. But that's like you just put yourself in a pickle.
Yeah, you took the destiny out of your own hands. Is basically what happened, and it's not. You don't want to have this type of loss this close to the end of the year. If you're gonna have a loss like that, you want to have it towards like the beginning or middle, just for momentum's sake. But on the other side. It's also a head-scratcher for the Jets because the Jets fans are like, okay, great, we won. But now we because we won, now we would technically have a second pick if the draft started today.
You should have seen the Twitter storm after that win. Everybody was like, what the hell are you doing? So we're going 0-16.
So the Jets fans were like, we can't even win right. We can't even lose right. Like, what is happening? Like, what? Because think about this. Like, if this holds and they get the second pick and they don't get Trevor Lawrence and we're just assuming that the the Jags would take Trevor Lawrence. Then what if we look back 10 years from now and we're like, oh, man, the Jets could have had Trevor Lawrence, and he's like a Hall of Fame guy, and look what he's doing with the Jags. And they have their chance, but no, this one time they beat the Rams.
Oh, my God.
That would be the nightmare for all Jet fans.
All right. Let's bring in the salty one, Mackenzie Brooks, in the house here so we can talk about that as well. Mac, my Rams, we're talking about my Rams losing to the Jets, of all things. Now we got put ourselves in a playoff pickle.
Ha! Look. I'm not going to lie.
Shut up, man.
I kind of giggled back to me. I can't. But I was kind of salty at first, but I'm like, you know, this would happen to some decent team. You know,
you already knew I was hot. You already knew I was hot after that loss. I was like, what the hell is this shit?
Yeah, I was like, well, it could be worse. You could no, I don't think it could be worse. Don't think that's the thing.
Yeah, no. The Jets fans were even more pissed off than anything. I think we were pissed off because we lost to the Jets, but Jets fans were like more pissed off that they won. That was not good.
Maybe not. Yeah, I was just like, I was sitting there like, oh, is this happening right now? Like, I was really kind of offended for you.
I don't know what I needed to do, but McVay just didn't, you know, McVay just kind of like, okay, I got outplayed or something, because that was his excuse. Now he has to beat Seattle, which is really a tough thing to do. To beat Seattle, division game, you could have won it already. Just bad. Let's go, Mac. Let's go into your realm in the East. Okay, the Washington football team, they clinched the NFC East division title with a win, plus a New York loss or a tie, or a tie and a New York loss, or a Philly-Dallas tie.
Well, see, seeing as how Washington, New York, and Philly all lost yesterday and Dallas won. One is crazy. And two,
Pollard. I played Pollard on my fantasy. Oh, my God. Thank you, Pollard.
Yeah, and I'm glad that I'm not glad that Zeke was hurt, but I'm glad that he was out, because Tony Pollard has been playing better football this entire year. So I can't be mad. I can, however, be pleasantly surprised. We've now had a 2-game winning streak with what's been less than a shell of the Dallas Cowboys. But it definitely gives us looks for next season, especially with Dak coming off the injury and seeing what other parts and components we have. So I'm thinking if Dallas can pull out the W this weekend, I'm thinking we'll be comfy in that second place spot.
Mac, were you surprised at any of the games this week? I mean, the Steelers losing to the Bengals last night, to me, that was like to a third-string quarterback. My God, I was like, what? And he did it.
Yeah.
He played so – and the guy was smiling the whole time. He's getting whacked. He was getting pressured. A big-ass smile the whole time.
Oh, yeah. No, look, that man is a G. Especially, like, you're third on the bench. Your second string is hurt. Joe Burrows is hurt, okay? Now this is just, you know, time for you to get some reps and maybe snag a second, you know, maybe snag, you know, a second string spot for next season, you know, showing what you can do at the end of a season of a down year. And to say that I'm surprised that the Steelers lost, I am, but I'm not. I am, just for the plain fact that they have been dominant for 65, 75, 85% of the season. And now the past probably 5 games they've had have been close. They almost had their first loss given to a Dallas Cowboys team. They damn near lost, was that two weeks ago? I think it was against the Chiefs. Yeah, they've had some close calls. But, you know, like I said, at the end of the day, it's any given game day, any given Saturday, Sunday. It's really who goes out there and what team wants it more.
Holly, are you surprised the Browns are at this close to making the playoffs. I mean, it's just they're just this close. They have to win out against the Jets, and then a Baltimore loss or a tie. They have to win, or a Miami loss or tie. There's a multiple ranges of how they can win. Indiana loses and they win, they get in. So, I mean, are we surprised that they're 10-4? It looks like Stefanski's doing something well.
Am I surprised that they're 10-4? No, actually, going into the season, you know, we looked at when people were making their predictions and looking at schedules. Their schedule is actually picked to be one of the easiest, if not the easiest, in the league, just from the standpoint of who they were playing. And I think what you're seeing is you're seeing a team that is, you know, coming off years and years and years of losing. And then last year they had all this hype and then they just fell apart. And I think what's happening is they are playing easier teams, but you can tell they're more confident now. So winning, you know, tends to do that. It tends to help your confidence level. And you can see also that they've adjusted some of their scheme offensively with Baker, and they have him rolling out more and doing different things that make him feel more comfortable. So he is definitely improving. And you also have two running backs that probably mm-hmm. would start anywhere, so that helps. And then I think, you know, I think their main question is, can they play consistently enough on the defensive end, and can they be consistent enough offensively and come playoff time? And so I definitely think that they are gaining their confidence. They're going the right direction. You know, they're going to get into the playoffs. And so now they're kind of getting to that level of, well, how far can we get in the playoffs? Can we stop a Kansas City defensively? Can we do those sort of things? So a lot is going to be, you know, told in the playoff picture once they get there. But even if they don't make a big run this year, it's going to tell them where they're at. And then so then in the off season, they can add those final pieces. But they're definitely going the right direction. And I think they've benefited a lot from this season with their confidence, and you can tell.
Without OBJ, if you put it as
funny,
a side
actually.
Note, right? No OBJ. If they had OBJ, I think they would have way better. But Landry's good. Hopper has been excellent for them as a second option, and I think they've been taking advantage of it really big time. Mac, Buffalo for real. We said it at the beginning of the year. Josh Allen makes this team roll. Tom Brady has gone south, and all of a sudden New England stinks. Now it is a race between Buffalo and Miami, which is very interesting. We've never had that in, 11 years, and then New England misses the playoffs.
You know, this is what's interesting to me, is every year for the past, 8 seasons, New England has made it, and Buffalo hasn't. Now, in 2020, it's a 180 the other direction. New England doesn't, and Buffalo is in handily. I think they're for real. They finally have all the components they need. Josh Allen is a freaking beast, period. Josh Allen is a monster.
I think Beasley's been a very good key acquisition. McKinney, you got Singletary. They got a balanced run game. Now they got the quarterback that can throw the ball. Buffalo really is the opposite of New England, you know, with kind of a Tom Brady-like offense, and I think they're benefiting.
Yeah, I think adding Cole Beasley to that Buffalo offense, because he can do so much, not just as a receiver, but he can run the ball and, you know, throw the halfback pass too. I think if they can start using some of those kind of sets in the offense for Buffalo, I think they're going to be very hard to stop.
AFC East Division champions. What do you think of that? I mean, that's just this kid's taken him
wild.
Less than 2 years. He's taken him there.
Yeah.
Very impressive win, 48-19 against Denver, which obviously Denver's got a lot of problems. But anyways, it worked out really good for them. The Chiefs win the West. Pittsburgh clinches the playoff berth even with a loss. So they could have gone for the division, but they didn't. Holly, your boy Herbert finally breaks out and beats the Raiders. So, you know, this is just, I guess, up from here, if anything. That's what we have to talk about the Chargers is from here on up.
Well, okay, so a couple things about this. So, first of all, a couple games ago was, like, the worst that they've played in a really long time, and I was very surprised that Anthony Lynn still had a job, and it was terrible. And
yep.
It's still not perfect, but I think that they've responded, at least the team has, the last couple weeks here. And I have to tell you, it was so much fun because when Carr went down and my boy Marcus got to play again, it was like Christmas, watching two of my favorite
mm-hmm.
people just duke it out. And I'm really happy for Herbert, and I think, you know, I think he's going to get the Rookie of the Year, Offensive Rookie of the Year, probably. And I think he's having an awesome year, and it was really exciting to watch. But I'm also really happy for Marcus because I feel like Marcus has had a really hard year and a half, and he's such a nice kid, and he has so much talent. And when I watched him in Oregon, he was like a surgeon. And he just got put in this is why it's important when you get drafted as a quarterback, it depends on where you go. And when he went to the Titans, he had, I don't remember how many, you know, head coaches, offensive coordinators and systems he had in like a few years, but it was like every year was different all the way around. And I don't think they used him correctly. And it was good to watch him play and just feel comfortable and confident again. Because as much, it's really interesting because I really felt like Marcus has more raw talent. And then Herbert, when I watched him in college, had a little less raw talent as far as accuracy, but more arm, but more mental grit that you can see now in this first year. But Marcus, there's still something there. And so I'm really hoping if it doesn't end up, you know, being with the Raiders because they still have Carr, that somebody else will take a shot on him because I still think there's something there. And so that was a fun game for me. I'm not going to lie. It was like I didn't know who to root for. I was like, go offense. Oh, okay, go the other offense. Yay. So that was pretty fun.
It was seesaw excitement. I think nobody would have thought that was going to happen. You know, and nobody thought Mariota. I put in a punk play in my FanDuel lineup, and everybody laughed at me at the beginning when I was in my group. I'm like, I'm going to put Mariota as a quarterback. And they're like, what do you refer? He's not even available. And I put Mariota at quarterback, and that guy got me some dollars. So that was kind of a fun play. And I got Mariota to give me some dollars. So that was really good. I mean, sometimes I just, like, coming into this game, I felt like Carr was not going to finish the game. And it looked like because the Chargers had been playing somewhat good defense. It's unfortunately that he got a hammy and he gave me some, you know, some dough, but you know, thanks to David Carr, really appreciate it. It was really cool of you, to do the hammy. It's not the same as the Lamar moment, but yeah, it's close to it, I guess, if you want to put it that way. What do we do? Mac, I know you don't want to give praises to the Cheeseheads, but they really took care of business. 24-16 is Carolina. They clinched the North, which I don't think anybody was surprised at the beginning of the year that the Packers would be here.
No one cares about Green Bay. Only Green Bay fans care about Green Bay. They suck, and I don't like them. Yay, good win for them. I mean, they played a less than subpar Carolina team with them having, you know, not having Greg Olsen anymore and now having C-Mac out for what seems to be the past month. They beat up on a subpar Carolina team. I mean, a win is a win. I just don't like Green Bay. I mean, I don't know, I ain't gonna lie to you. But the saving grace is they have a rough one coming up this week, Oscar. You know,
well, they only got Tennessee.
I'm not real sure.
They're only playing for a first round bye. You think they're gonna hold Henry?
You know, no, I don't think so. Not at all. We all see what Derrick Henry has done to people. And Derrick Henry does Derrick Henry things, as me and my friends like to say. Derrick Henry is going to do Derrick Henry things, which include manhandling defensive backs because that's what he does.
You're in love with this guy.
I love me some Derrick Henry. That's my guy. Like he's the best running back in football right now. I don't care what anybody has to say. Like his stats and numbers, and it seems like every week after NFL Sunday, there's a meme about him. Like legitimately, and it's at the cost of some other defensive back.
Yeah, I think he's going to play a good game. Green Bay clinches a first-round bye if they beat Tennessee, or if Seattle loses to the Rams, or if New Orleans loses and they got a tie. So there's a scenario then to do a clinch to clinch a first-round bye. So there's incentive there for Green Bay. Holly, let's go into Friday, Minnesota, New Orleans. So New Orleans at this point sits. They can clinch the South. They win. Or a Tampa Bay loss, or a New Orleans tie, or Tampa Bay tie. So they're you know, must win. In other words, they have to win in order for them to win the division.
Yeah, you know, I think the Saints definitely need this game. I mean, the beginning of last week, you know, Drew Brees was coming off his injury, and he definitely looked not quite right. I think he missed like his first like six or seven passes, and it just didn't seem very cohesive. And he got his rhythm a little bit later, but I think it was a little too late. I think the Saints, you know, definitely need this game. You want to have Drew Brees clicking on all cylinders with your offense going into the playoffs. You don't want to be backdooring your way in with your quarterback banged up and your offense not in rhythm. And so this is an opportunity for them to kind of, you know, tune things up and shore up that division. And I think they can do that against the Vikings. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, I definitely think Brees, of all people, he needs this game and he needs to perform well.
Are you disappointed in Minnesota so far? I mean, it's kind of been a disappointment.
I think they dug themselves too big of a hole. You know what I mean? Like, they started off really rocky this year, and then they kind of turned it around a little bit, and then they've kind of fallen back down. And I think, you know, it's one of those seasons of if they had come out of the gate the way that we all thought that they would, then the recent two or three games wouldn't have been an issue. But when you start that poorly, you have to be basically perfect going forward. And it is kind of disappointing. I mean, poor Devin Cook is, like, doing everything out there.
Yeah.
He's like, Superman out there. And, you know, and then Justin Jefferson has just exploded. So it's not that they don't have, like, people. They have talent. They're just not consistent. And I don't know, you know, what their game plan in the offseason will be. But they do have a few holes, and we'll see if they're able to regroup or if there might be questions at quarterback, if that's an issue. But it is disappointing considering that you have people like Dalvin Cook and Justin Jefferson just going all crazy everywhere. So, yes, to answer you.
All right. Mac, Tom Brady will make a playoff berth if they win and take care of Detroit, which is very likely that that will happen. And that means Belichick's not in the playoffs. So that means he wins. We talked about at the end of the year. Who will, you know, if Brady left, the savior Newton, would they stay on the same course that Brady was in? And now we have the answer. The answer is Tom Brady will probably go to the playoffs while his coach in New England will not.
Yeah, you know, this is a funny one because at the beginning of the season, we were talking about Tom Brady, you know, potentially being just a system quarterback. You know, you could put him anywhere and he would make that system better or great. Seems to me that Tom Brady he's a guy. Tom Brady is the it man when it comes to long-lasting quarterbacks. Like him, Drew Brees, you know, Big Ben, the big-time vets of the league. And when you look at the kind of season that you know, Bill Belichick has had, he has had less than a, you know, presumably great season with having Cam Newton and Will Greer as his backup. Jones did another. So it's going to be interesting to see if TB12 and Gronk and Tristan Wirfs down there can pull off a playoff berth the first, you know, the first year. Him and Gronk are back together after, you know, 2 years. It's gonna make a statement. It's gonna say something.
All right. So if Detroit pulls the upset, all they got to rely on is on Chicago loss, which is more than likely will happen. But we'll see. But they should get the win. They won't clinch the division because I think New Orleans will take care of Minnesota, but it puts them in the playoffs. So I think it makes them look good. Holly, Niners got nothing to play for except for maybe revenge and spoilers against Arizona.
Oh, man. 2020. Okay, my team has had one of the most 2020 seasons, I think, out there. And then, you know, I just heard this afternoon that Nick Mullins can't play and he's out the rest of the season, too. And so it's McKenzie's guy, CJ, starting going forward. And then we signed Rosen. Out of nowhere, I think, just as a backup guy, just in case. It's to the point now where it's like I was watching the game against the Cowboys, and I was like, you know what? We just turned the ball all over the damn place, and that's my frustration with Nick. Like, he has the skill set to fit this scheme, and that he can be a ball distributed person, but he just turns the ball over and makes bad decisions when he gets pressured and he gets flustered.
Yep.
And when you have like a good defensive line where they're just coming after you every play, that's when he just completely melts down mentally and makes terrible mistakes. And so that's a problem. And then defensively, considering how many people we lost, we've actually done pretty good considering that this year. But obviously it's not our year. And so for me right now, I'm like, we need a quarterback because this year has given us glances. We've gotten a good look at all three guys, and I don't think any of the three guys or the guy, you know. And I think, you know, when they drafted.
I'll send you Goff.
What was that?
You want Goff?
No, I do not want
Goff.
No. He's the exact opposite of what we need. Just talking even just from a style standpoint. But when we drafted Ayuk, you know, when we had all these receivers on the board that we could have picked, I think that really tells you that we, at least Shanahan seems to want to have a lot of weapons that are, you know, yak people, so yards after catch. He wants to drop the ball off in the intermediate game and have them run for extra yardage, which is why we have Deebo Samuel, George Kittle, and Ayuk are all – that's all of their style. That's who they are, right? So if that's their style and that's the style of your weapon, Jimmy does not fit that. He is a drop back passer, play action guy, and ever since his injury – he was never really mobile before, but after his injuries, he's been even less mobile – and that's not his style. So your quarterback and the weapons and your scheme are all at conflict. And so I think they've been trying to make it work, but it's kind of like taking a square peg and trying to force it into a round hole. It's just not working. And so for me, I'm like, okay, McKenzie's team, you can beat us because we need draft picks. And thank you for the loss because now we're
You're
moving
on the
up
Jets
a couple
bandwagon.
Spots. And now, yes, now I'm in the Jets bandwagon. And now I'm like, yay, Cincinnati, go for it. Beat the Steelers. Because right now, like, you know, talking about, like, the Cowboys, you know, as long as they take care of Dak, they have a quarterback. That's not their problem. They're going to be okay if they end up drafting, like, 7th, 8th, 9th or somewhere in there. We need to move up to get a quarterback. And so for me, I'm like, okay, it's nice if we win, but I'm really actually more happy right now if we lose because I know if we get that quarterback, even if he's done and we have to take lumps with him next year, if you place that with the people we have coming back from injuries, we'll still be very competitive next year. So our piece that we're really missing right now that's the most immediate, in my opinion, is that quarterback spot. So thank you, McKenzie, because this is the only time I'll be happy that the Cowboys beat the Niners.
Holly, look, I'll tell you this. I did not expect Dallas to do as well as they did, especially against the 49ers, because the same thing happened last year, the same series of events, turnovers, picked off balls, batted down balls, and then we lost because of, you know, a missed field goal or something stupid. I will tell you, however, I don't think you guys are really in that much need of a quarterback. Like, you have C.J. Beathard, and you've had him for a while, and him throwing that Hail Mary at the end of the game proves that you still have a quarterback. Like, people don't realize, like, C.J. Beathard was one of the better quarterbacks to come out of Iowa, and he's actually one of the longer-lasting quarterbacks that's still active in the NFL that has come out of the University of Iowa. I think what has to happen is though, you guys are going to have to get him reps. If you're, you know, if the coaching staff, or the OC, things of that nature aren't happy with how the way Nick Mullins is playing right now, I think you have to give that chance to C.J. Beathard because he's been there. He's been through the trenches. He's been, you know, he carried you guys to the playoff and Super Bowl, what was that, 2-3 years ago? So, you know, you guys kind of have to look at what you already have first. I mean, I can't agree, however, you know, you want to get higher to get a better draft pick. That I can agree with, but I don't quite think you guys need a quarterback. Like, C.J. Beathard is still a good quarterback. I just think, you know, kind of like we were just talking about with Tom Brady, or and even Marcus Mariota, rather, you know, you put him, you know, you pick him up and put him somewhere, and maybe he adjusts to, you know, that offense better. Maybe it suits his skill set better, but I think until then, you have to give C.J. Beathard a chance to rework him, you know, to get himself reworked into that starting position week to week for the rest of the season.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that C.J. has a skill set, and he has gotten a lot more opportunity this year, and he will the rest of the season. I think that it's more a question of does that skill set fit the scheme that they're trying to run. And so he'll have his opportunity these last couple of games to show something. I definitely think he has an arm, and he has a lot there. So if this doesn't work with the Niners, I do think he might be kind of like a Marcus that finds a spot somewhere else. But I just know that it's kind of like a question for Shanahan of, do I want – is one of these three guys, you know, somebody that I think so highly of that I'm going to adjust my offense to them? Or do I really think that these three guys, one of them fits the offense? I think that's the problem that I'm having. There's a disconnect there between style and, you know, between the style of these three guys and the scheme they're trying to run. Because in my mind, I'm like, okay, in that draft, we had four of the, I don't know, like all of the best receivers were on the board. We had Justin Jefferson there. We could have taken him. If we took that guy, that tells me you want to stay with Jimmy because he's a guy that can stretch the field and he's also a good route runner. But Ayuk is the guy that's like the underneath guy, the guy that you can run jet sweeps with, the guy that you can run a slant and then have him run 15 yards after. Like, he's that guy. So I'm like, why are we getting these players that are one direction, but our quarterbacks are all this direction? That's why it's kind of disconnected. So I do like CJ, and I hope that he can prove in the next couple games, you know, because I'm not quite sure if he fits the scheme that they want. So we'll see, but I'm still rooting for him.
Yeah, I can agree with you there. You know, going off of the kind of quarterbacks that you guys have had, and then going to, you know, Kyle Shanahan, more of a RPO, option run pass, heavy offense, I can kind of see why you would think C.J. Beathard isn't, you know, doesn't quite fit that. But again, going back to where he went to college, I was known for running the RPO and very well. So, like I said, I think it just, at this point, comes down to how he performs in game time situations,
right?
You know, how he performs with the, you know, getting reps again with the starting, you know, with the that first team. So I
right.
think that's just it right there is, you know, making sure he can get acclimated and stay acclimated so you guys can either start winning or at least start showing improvement towards the end of the season. And I think that's what, and I think that's going to be like a lot of the bigger teams' problems, like especially like I can even say that
right.
by Dallas Cowboys, like there's no saying what is going to happen with Ezekiel Elliott next year. You pay him $90 million and he's played like absolute crap this entire season. He's out with an injury and then you put in Tony Pollard and Tony Pollard, you know, pretty much picks up where he left off, except he's making positive yardage. He's making the plays. Andy Dalton's not going to be the starting quarterback next year. I mean, that's everybody that knows football and that has watched him play and knows that he's not going to be the starter next year. You know, if Dak is on schedule and, you know, they feel Dak is ready to get into game time situations again, he's not going to be the starter, but he's going to have those reps. You know, that way, if another team needs a good quarterback or a decent quarterback, Andy Dalton might be on that list. Because they only, you know, Dallas only signed him for one season, and I'm glad they did because, you know, we needed him. But it all comes down to how you break him down and how, you know, how you're able to adjust and make those kind of adaptations.
Yeah, I definitely think Dallas might have paid the wrong guy. I never really ever since Zeke had that really awesome year. It, for me, at least from a third-party perspective, it seems like his production has completely dropped. And I don't know why. I don't know if he's just gotten kind of satisfied with where he's at. But that one year, he had like a edge and a fire to him. And I know the offensive line was really good that year too. But he doesn't seem to have that anymore. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, no,
because McCarthy doesn't really run running backs as much as he used to. And I think he's talented, but the line is failing because he's not a gap visionary running back. If you open the gaps, he's good. Where Pollard is more of a visionary, and you can tell that he obviously understands where the openings are going to be at.
Yeah, and it kind of seems like Zeke is relying a little bit on his natural talent rather than his football IQ. His football IQ is disgustingly high, just like, you know, almost 100% of the guys who are playing in the NFL, you know, getting paid millions of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars to coach or play or be on that staff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you would think one would try to use their football IQ, you know, IQ that they've spent – of 10 years trying to create and make better to get in that kind of situation. And I feel like Zeke at this point is just, he's kind of reverting back to how he was his sophomore, junior year of college. You know, and then they got that national title break and, you know, his vision just went haywire. You know, he was running through gaps, creating gaps that weren't even there. You know, just like you guys said, you know, he was doing that the first 2 years and then these past 2 years, have been totally different. So you also have to wonder if it's, you know, maybe he's performing like that because he doesn't like the offensive scheme that McCarthy's come up with, you know, maybe just because he feels like he's not needed, which I don't think is true because if that were the case, Tony Pollard wouldn't have been ill. I think Tony Pollard had like 115 yards rushing and one touchdown on Sunday running that same style of offense.
A visionary, where I think the lower price guys probably just want his opportunity to kind of shine. So we'll see what McCarthy does with, you know, going forward. But there are obviously off-season questions right there with the running back position. So Holly, you're going to take Arizona over your Niners from what we gathered, and then I'm assuming at this point I'm rooting for, you know, a Seattle loss. We need a win in Seattle because I don't want the other intangible, but. I'm not too confident that McVay's going to make – he's always played Seattle really good, so I'm hoping he'll step up. And after this loss, hopefully they're that pissed off that they got to go into Seattle and kind of, you know, take care of the Seahawks. But other than that, it should be pretty good. So are you bailing on us or hanging out?
So I do have to go, but I wanted to leave on the note of saying I will be rooting for the Rams, because if my Niners can't, you know, be involved in the playoff scenarios, I just, you know, I don't want the Seahawks to do it. So I am definitely jumping on your half bandwagon, I guess.
Awesome.
And I'll be rooting
appreciate
for your team.
It. Appreciate it. Holly,
all
have
right,
a good
thank
Christmas.
You.
We'll touch base before the new year. So have a great weekend and with family and all that on Friday, okay?
All right, you guys too. All right, bye.
Right.
Bye, Holly.
So, Matt, Miami gets to go to Vegas. Miami's in the wild card position right now. They're 9-5. Vegas has nothing to play for at this point. I don't think they're going to make anything out of it. The way they played this past weekend, unless Mariota, it's a Tua versus Mariota. I don't know if Carr's coming back, but at this point, if I was Gruden, I would play the hot hand, which was the one that performed pretty well this past week.
Oh, man. You know, I'm not an Alabama fan by any means, but it seems like all the Bama boys are coming into this league or have been in this league, and I'm just tearing it apart. I mean, you have Amari Cooper down in Dallas, Derrick Henry in Tennessee. Now you got Tua T throwing dimes, him and his left-handed self throwing dimes and just finally opening up that Miami playbook the way it should have been opened up. You know, they had Josh Rosen. That didn't work out. They had Fitzmagic. That didn't work out. Then you draft Tua T and fresh off a hip, you know, fresh off of that hip replacement surgery, and is moving and playing better than he was when he was at Bama, you know, which just goes to show the hard work that he's put in to put himself and keep himself in that position. And the same thing is, we know, with Mariota. Mariota was down there in Tennessee for the longest, and then, you know, they choose not to pick up his contract and they ship him to Vegas, and he ends up sitting on the bench behind, you know, Derek Carr, and now Derek Carr gets hurt, and now Mariota comes back in there and takes the saddle again. So it's going to be a bloodbath, but I'm going to have to take Miami by like 10, just because.
I have to look at Miami, because I think defensively they're way better. If they play Carr, then it's a sure win for them. If they play Mariota, kind of a toss-up. It'll be a toss-up, because Mariota played pretty decent ball right there, and you do have receivers. You know, you got Jacobs, and you got pretty good receivers in terms of the Raiders, and they looked like they were energized when he came in. After Carr left, it looked like the whole Raider offensive got a little bit energized. Unfortunately, I think it was just a little too late for them at that point. So against Tua here, Tua has an opportunity here, you know, first year in, to take Miami to the playoffs. So this AFC East is very interesting, and given that Buffalo will face New England, man, I mean, Buffalo should be like just salivating right now to just take it to New England and give them a beatdown, send them home.
Yeah, if Tua plays his cards right, he can definitely get Miami into the playoffs his rookie season. And if he does that, I think that'll put him in better contention for Offensive Rookie of the Year. I think right now at this point, as far as that award's concerned, it's going to be a pretty good tie between him. It'll be Tua T, Justin Herbert, and probably CeeDee Lamb for Offensive Rookie of the Year, and maybe Tristan Wirfs. You know, I mean, they play three different positions between the four of them. So it'll be a battle. But like I said, I think I'm going to have to give respect to Tua T and those fans down there, because they have been impressing people, and without hesitation.
And you had mentioned it, Mac, a couple podcasts ago. You said, you know, the Coach Flores is very impressive, especially with the change at quarterback. The defense has improved under his leadership, and this is the fruit of their laboring now. This is an opportunity for Miami, especially with the New England down year, for them to really get into the playoffs, and now it becomes a kind of a serious mode for them to recover after two horrible seasons prior to that. We're looking at Miami kind of like, just even if they get into the wild card and not even get a win, But as long as they get into the wild card, very impressive turnaround.
Yeah, I did. Like I said, you know, a couple podcasts ago, the defense has a fire to them now. They're constantly alert. They're not just alert when it's third down. It's downs 1 through 4 and punt, you know, punt return. So it's like there's a tremendous difference there, and it's really interesting to see. I like it a lot. It's very refreshing.
All right, Josh Allen will face New England. New England has nothing to play for. So at this point, they're almost on the same boat as the Niners against Arizona. But I just feel like he's on a groove now. Allen and company, Beasley, Singletary, McKinney, everybody out there in Buffalo is on a groove. I mean, they know they've already clinched the division. This is just an icing or just a middle finger to New England for the year.
That's exactly what it is. It's a big 180 middle finger to that cocky fan base and the, you know, feeling of not being able to get over that New England hump. And like I said, in 2020, they've been able to reverse that in handling. Like I said, they've got those big parts over there in defense, you know, being led by the rookie A.J. Epenesa out of Iowa. Okay, they've got Josh Allen just ripping people apart. They've got Cole Beasley over there. And their offensive line is stout. That's the biggest difference between having all those parts on different sides of the ball, but having an offensive line to go with it. That's the biggest part, and that's the part that excites me. And I think that's also the part that is putting teams on notice. Like, it's not going to be easy playing a Buffalo Bills team that's, you know, got equal components now.
Mac, I had a tweet from somebody that said to me, Pittsburgh is a fraud, and the Bills are for real. The 11-3s. They're 11-3. The Bills are for real. Pittsburgh somehow just got here on luck, and they're starting to show.
I'm not going to say they're fraud, because you don't just go 11-0 easily. But you also didn't, you know, you didn't manhandle anybody. You didn't. Like, you weren't on all cylinders, all 11 of those games. So I think the better term is probably a little bit of a fake ID or exposed.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say they're a fraud, because you can't discredit the wins that they've already gotten. And the pure fact that they have a stout defense. Like, they have a defense that's a lot like the Steel Curtain, you know. Or I guess a baby steel curtain is what I've been hearing being circulated.
Well, and then Pittsburgh's kind of struggled the last, 3 weeks with the COVID, the scheduling changes, all this other stuff that's happened to them. So maybe, I don't know if that's a factor at this point, considering everything that's happened to them. It looks like they're playing for their playoff lives. They could have done the same thing the Rams did. If they beat the Jets, they won the division. If they beat the Bengals, they would have won the division. And now they're on the outside looking in and hoping somebody else is going to help them out. So it's really tough there. But who knew at the beginning of the year that we would see number one Kansas City and number two Buffalo in the AFC? It's pretty impressive for the Buffalo.
Yeah, you know, like I said, it takes, you know, couple drafts, you know, some trades, free agents, you know, to really start to rebuild a team to where they can start being respected. And that's exactly what the Bills have done. That's exactly what they have done, and they deserve every part of this. Like I said, you now have to keep it. You have to stay consistent with it.
All right. So the other tweet I got, Mac, was, don't ever say that New York Giants and New York Jets are from New York, because they're not. So the real New York team is the Buffalo Bills, New York State. So that's what I was clarified with. So the Buffalo Bills are New York.
I can
only NFL New York team.
And I can see why people would say that, because that is true. They are the only team that's from New York State. Both the other two, I believe, play in New Jersey. So I can definitely understand. And I can definitely see why.
Especially the way they're playing right now, I think they're all taking pride, right? Because the other two teams just suck. They're bad. They're horrible. So there's no pride in the New Jersey squads in the Meadowlands. Well, in Buffalo,
yeah,
it's kind of uprising.
All.
And then, you know, Buffalo, a small town. If you think about Green Bay, you think about Buffalo, there's a couple, you know, cities in the NFL, small towns. So, I mean, just the community in Buffalo, for them to be ranked number two in the AFC, I mean, they got to be ecstatic right now.
Yeah, they are really, you know, they are kind of, as far as Buffalo is concerned, they are smaller in that concept in terms of, you know, Green Bay, big city, you know, Pittsburgh, big city, Dallas, big city, you know, New York Giants, big city, Miami, big city. You know, Buffalo is a smaller city, but it's got a big team. I mean, they're playing big. They look big, and they're solid. It's just you can't take away what they've done already.
All right. You think the Browns are winning because of Cali Brenton that came in and helped them out at this point and did double wins? No OBJ, and the Browns literally at this point are playing for a playoff berth, which they haven't done since like 2001, I think it is. So Stefanski and company, very impressive in terms of turning the Browns in double digits, where the last season and two seasons before, these other two coaches could not do it, even with so much talent that they had.
You know, I like to give Oklahoma fans a big razzing. It's quite entertaining for me. With that aside, Baker Mayfield, I think, has finally started to understand that you can't just come off of, you know, a good sophomore season, or, you know, a good rookie season. You have to put in the extra work, and I think that's exactly what he's done. He's been able to do all of the adjustments, adaptations to a different head coaches in a year, adding Cali Brunson to that offensive coaching staff or staff in general. And, you know, he's probably one of people are going to give me a bunch of crap for this, but, and I'm not saying I hate him, but he's one of the most disliked people in the NFL for whatever reason. I can't quite seem to figure out, but like, I think it's his strange moxie that he has that people don't quite care for. I mean, obviously, you know, most of us aren't in the Browns, you know, locker room, front office, things of that nature, but I think he's proving people wrong. You know, I think he's proving people like, I'm here to play. My team is legit. You know, and
he's got weapons.
I think that's what it is.
The backup running backs, I mean, both running back sets are good. The receivers are in place. I got a good tight end. I mean, I think they're balancing the offense a lot better for him, where he can actually, you know, do the escapability part of it in the red zone. They've converted a lot more impressively. So I think, you know, Cleveland, in that regard, we weren't talking about them at the beginning of the year because we thought, okay, same old Browns. But now the question mark is whether the Ravens are going to be even relevant. And then at this point, Pittsburgh looks like it's on a slide. So there's an opportunity for Cleveland to kind of get into the playoffs and maybe make some noise.
Well, you know, and that's exactly my point is, like, you know, we know the Browns for being 1-16 and 2-31 within the past 3 or 4 years. Then Baker Mayfield gets, you know, number one draft pick, and boom, he slowly turns that Browns offense and team into a legitimately respectable team. Then the next year you add Nick Chubb. Then the next year you pick up Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham Jr. off a trade in free agency. Then you, in that same draft as Dak Prescott, you pick up Myles Garrett, you know, and then you just start building your team. And that's what it's all about. Like I said, rebuilding and building your team through drafts and extra components is what's going to do it.
All right. So we're looking at the 2 weeks left here coming into it. AFC, Kansas City, and obviously already the top dog, 13-1, Buffalo 11-3, Pittsburgh 11-3, Tennessee 10-4. So they must win against Green Bay for them to clinch the playoff berth. Cleveland in the same scenario. Indianapolis really on the outside looking in. So they got to make a push for it. Miami, I think, should win against the Raiders. The Raiders will get eliminated. I doubt they'll fire Gruden. I think he's on a 10-year contract, so I don't think he's going to be ousted. On the other side, Green Bay is 11-3. New Orleans 10-4. Seattle 10-4. And you got Washington football team 6-8. Could win the division here. The Rams 9-5 against that big battle against Seattle. Tampa Bay should get the win, and then that means the Tom Brady streak for being in the playoffs will remain intact. And then Arizona really should get a win against San Francisco, and that puts them in the hunt for the playoffs too. So interesting Week 16 weekend starting Friday, and there's a couple games on Saturday. Sunday night game, Tennessee versus Green Bay. Monday night, hopefully it's not an embarrassing situation for New England, but Buffalo, New England on Monday night as well. Pretty exciting weekend for, you know, in terms of the playoff hunts and in terms of who's going to get in, who's not going to get in.
Yeah, this holiday weekend for, you know, at least NFL is going to be interesting. Like I said, you have an NFC East division that literally can be taken by anybody, because that's how close it is, and that's just how bad the NFC East has been this year. Then you have the numerous amount of teams that you just mentioned, most of them in contention, and then a couple people hunting on the wild card spot, and some teams that are just looking for spoilers. So it's going to be interesting to see who plays those spoiler parts, who steps up and wins big, and who just, you know, is able to slide in there.
All right, so if you guys haven't gone to the Hub, I don't know what you're doing week to week, but you go to the Hub. Go to the Hub, figure it out at facebook.com/gridironbeauties. Check it out there. We got NFL content, college football content, plus everything that happens in the women's game. You're up to date in one place, one time, because we have the best network on the planet covering the sport. So check it out. And if you went to the Hub, you would know that Naomi Robles was the first woman to play ONEFA Major League in Mexico, similar to a Sarah Fuller playing in a Power 5 in the U.S. So shout out to Naomi Robles for participating, being the first woman to play in a ONEFA Major League, which is a high university caliber play in Mexico. So pretty awesome, Mac.
Yeah, you know, when I saw that we dropped that over there on the Hub, like we normally drop all the breaking news as far as football is concerned, I was very proud, because, you know, football and women play no joke football. It doesn't matter what platform it's on. And the faster people realize that, the faster the sport's going to grow. And the faster the sport's going to grow, the easier everybody's lives will be. You know, football's not just played on a field with men or on a flag with full equipment. There's all kinds of different football, but it's hard hitting and it's legitimate. And if you went to the Hub, people would know that.
All right, the other article, if you missed it, is Ashley Wisenhunt, WFA champion, Team USA world champion, and an outstanding international flag player as well. And she's been on Team USA for the flag side as well. So you get the article there for Ashley Wisenhunt, which is what an amazing athlete all the way around, amazing woman as well, very talented. If you missed the WNFC special event, you can get the replay right there. All the coaches from all WNFC teams giving their feedback in terms of a preseason set, in terms of what's going to happen with each team and where they're at in terms of rostering, including a shout out to the Mack truck here from the coach at Nebraska, the Nebraska coach. Impressive preseason and off-season workout. So, Mackenzie, good job.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Look, I'll tell you just a little bit. If you missed the special event roster reveal for the WNFC, you can catch it on the WNFC page, I believe. The live video itself is still out there. You can also check the WNFC website as well. But our coach, Lyndon Johnson, man, I love Coach Johnson. That's my guy. He's so funny, but he means business. And that's exactly what our team needed, is we needed a change. You know, we needed somebody that was going to get in our butt and say, look, we're here to play football. We're not here to do anything else. You know, you can be friends and joke on the side, but we're here when it's practice, it's practice. When it's game, it's game. You're here to learn. You're here to work. So, and I feel like as a veteran of the sport and a second-year veteran of the Nebraska Nighthawks, I feel as if my team has adapted to Coach Johnson and the new staff very, very well. And I got to give a shout-out to my entire team because we've done nothing but work our butts off this year. We already know that we're going to be we're an underdog, but we don't look at it that way. We play with a chip on our shoulder, and we're going to run right through people. That's what we do. That's what the Nighthawks do. That's what teams in the WNFC do. So anybody that's out there doubting us, you better strap your helmet on because we're coming in. We're not coming slow.
And on top of that, he's obviously a very experienced coach from the Euro leagues and the semi-pro men's leagues as well and women's teams over in Europe as well. So you got a really good duel right there. Competition for him is not going to be a surprise. Obviously, you got Utah and you got all the other tough teams in the West, in the Midwest and to the West there. So he's expecting, obviously, a battle, and he's expecting you guys to really be in that mix. So really really good job there. So shout out to you and your team. We're doing a great job. The other news was Mike Oliveira by the X-League announces that he is going to be the new owner of Equity for the Austin Sound. We also had Dane Robinson for the Atlanta Empire, as the league had announced at the beginning of the year that they would give an opportunity to coaches to see if they would like to own franchises. So they're going into a franchise mode with some coaches. And another coach here is Mike Oliveira. IWFA Texas teams submitted their all-star rostering in terms of awards. So you can check it out right there. Offense, defense, special teams, everything else from the 8-on-8 teams in IWFA. So it's right there at the hub for the honors, all league honors for the IWFA teams. So check it out there if you have a chance. And then you can get everything NFL recaps from this past weekend from the NFL, plus college football rundowns from everything that happened in the college football game, also at the hub there. On top of that, Callie Branson in the Hall of Fame for the game with the Browns game. And she participated there when she was doing the coaching, the substitute coaching for the tight end group. So she's in the Hall of Fame. And then the Sarah Fuller moment and all the things that happened with Sarah Fuller are also going to be at the College Football Hall of Fame. So really impressive. Two honors for both amazing athletes there.
Oh, man. That's just a bunch of deserving individuals for the sport of football have finally being recognized, and I love that. We got to capitalize on it, not to, which means people got to go to the hub, people have to follow the women's team, people have to actually get in tune with the women's game, whether it's in the States or international. That's what's going to get more women and more deserving people into that Hall of Fame setting. And like I said, it starts with going to the hub and checking out the news. It starts with ingratiating yourself in the sport and not just as a fan of football, but as an actual fan, knowing all the other components other than NFL and college.
Yeah, so thanks to everybody that contributes to our information, especially on the women's side. We got off-season in the WFA. We got off-season in the WNFC. We got WFLA going to kick off probably in May of 2021, as it's slated today. Hopefully that will not change. But we got two top three leagues, plus we still got the leagues in Canada, the WWCFL, the Maritime in Canada, plus the three top leagues in Mexico, LEXFA, LaFi, and FX Mexico. So once they get rolling, hopefully without this COVID mentality here, once they get rolling, you're going to get to see the best women's American football ballers on the North American continent. And you get the coverage right here from the best network on the planet is at the hub at facebook.com/GridironBeauties. All right. Shout out to Mac, all our listeners in Russia, 1% listener in Russia. So I don't know how many people that is, but shout out to Russia for diving into the hub. And then also shout out to them for subscribing to our podcast. Shout out to the Spain group. Gracias España por estar con el podcast con nosotros. Mucho, mucho, mucho gracias. And then Australia, can't always, our Aussie girls, our Aussie fans, really love you guys out there, always in the mix and listening to the podcast, plus everybody in Canada and the U.S. So really, really appreciate you guys. So listen to the podcast, get the replays on your favorite platform. You can listen to Mac, Holly, Nate, myself, and all the previous co-hosts that we've had, over 300 episodes. So don't miss out on all the content that we've had for, you know, since 2009, over 350 episodes now. So, Mac, listen to you in Russia and Spain. It's pretty awesome in terms of Euro scene.
Look, I'm almost cool, Oscar. You know, I'm trying to catch up to you and Holly and Nate. You know, y'all have a fan base. I feel like I'm just here. You know, it's nice to know that my crazy voice and personality is being heard over in the Euros. I love that. Okay. I love me some Russians. Y'all are amazing. Y'all are really funny. Just so you guys know, I'm with it. Thank you for your support. That goes for everybody. Okay. Without you, we could not do this podcast. Without you, we can't have a hub, you know, because we have to have a public and audience to present news to, and that's y'all. So, you know, we just give a big shout out on this holiday weekend. I hope everybody has a great holiday season. Be safe, mask up, and all that good stuff.
All right. So, let's end it up here. We have a bye week in Australia. Queensland, the championship won last weekend by Aces 11. Now, Gridiron New South Wales, we get a bye week this week. And Gridiron West, we get a bye week this week. So, New South Wales will not be back in action until January 16th, week 11. And then Gridiron West will be back in action January 1st. So, at the beginning of the new year. So, we'll dive into them as we get back into action at the beginning of first week or second week of January, and Gridiron West goes through February, and then Gridiron New South Wales is going to end up at the middle of February. So, Mac, I don't know what else, but great holiday. Hopefully you're going to have a great time at home and, you know, spend it with your family and everything else, and hopefully you're not crazy shopping. I did my shopping mostly online last month, so kind of got caught up with everything ahead of time, so I didn't have to go out and do much shopping, but hopefully you know that's going to be the case for you.
Yeah, Oscar, I pretty much have all my shopping done. Just got to finish wrapping a couple of stuff up, and then, you know, we're good to go.
All right. So thanks for coming in. I really appreciate it. Hope you have a great Friday, Christmas Day. We'll check out our pre-New Year's podcast, obviously next Tuesday, and get ready for the new year because we're going to be bringing a little bit more heat and, you know, more reach on the major platforms. So we are diving into a lot more things at the beginning of the new year. Hopefully all those things will benefit and bring more awareness to women's American football, especially here in the U.S. and North America. But shout out to all the amazing ballers of 2020, the IWFA, everybody that played women's American football and flag tackle this year that they got the opportunity to play. So shout out to all you guys that provided us with some content for our football fix. So thank you guys all to all the Texas girls out there that played in the IWFA that did an amazing job throughout that season as well. So we anticipate a great new year, hopefully COVID free, especially with the vaccine going now in all these places. So I guess, you know, Mac, I guess you just got to pray that everything goes back to normal, hopefully by, you know, before April, and we get some football.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking that's what's going to happen, but in order to do that, we got to keep up with the regulations. You know, wear your mask where it's needed, stay home if you're sick, go, you know, get tested if you absolutely have to, you know, keep the social distancing up, because the more that we, you know, as a whole group of people, followed by, you know, the rules and regulations of the COVID season, the faster we'll be able to go back to a somewhat normal lifestyle.
All right. So for Mackenzie Brooks, the absent Holly Custis and Nate Ward, Oscar Lopez here, wishing you a merry, merry Christmas and a happy new year. We'll see you here next week for the pre-New Year's edition of the podcast. Have a great night, everybody. Thank you.